Well, I, first of all, I'm very honored with this citation here. I thank you very much and for you taking the time to hear me. I'm going to have to give the abbreviated version of my talk because I have to get a flight back to Washington because I'm going to have to fly all night to get back there. So I, again, appreciate you having me here. Some of you have already heard this today, but my main focus here is to try to help you and join forces with the Alaskan legislature to upgrade your laws in the area of child protection and catch up where, in some cases, you're years behind other states, and in some cases, you have put together some very proactive and protective pieces of legislation. I will go over the statistics rather rapidly. In this country, in any given year, there are 1.5 million missing children, there are 1 million physically abused children, and there are now new estimates by the FBI that upwards of 1 million to possibly as high as 3 million children will be sexually molested or exploited in this country each year, 70% of those by someone they know in the area of sexual exploitation. So what we have done in Washington after the death of my son 3.5 years ago, my main attack was on federal legislation, trying to get the Federal Missing Children's Bill passed, the Federal Missing Children's Assistance Bill, the creation of the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, with a toll-free 800 number that President Reagan opened up in July and June 13th of 1984, and the implementation of the Violent Criminal Apprehension Program that would track mobile and serial murders. So we've had some success on the federal level, but the real battle is on the state level, and that's why I'm spending all my time as a consultant appointed by the administration going from state to state, trying to get states or to bring them a blueprint of what they need to do to protect their children. This blueprint is called Our Selected State Legislation, A Guide for Effective State Laws to Protect Children, which was put together by the American Bar, the National Association of District Attorneys, NOVA, many concerned citizens, child advocates, state legislators, federal legislators. We got input from everyone we could on this, and to try to come up with something that would show state legislators what the best possible laws were to protect their children. Many of these laws were passed, amended, reworked. There are certain sections in here that suggest a compilation of three laws from three different states into the best state. So, as I've said all day, although Alaska may be behind in several areas of child protection, it's an excellent opportunity for you, with the attention and awareness here in this state, to pass good laws the first time out, to review your laws, to pass, as I keep saying, the Rolls-Royce bills rather than the Chevette bill that you're going to have to put a Band-Aid on and amend and bring back 7 or 8 times. And these are bills that have proven to work. I'm going to go over the areas here to explain the intent of the law, because many legislators don't have the opportunity to hear, to attend different hearings or understand what the law is, but certainly they need to support it when it comes up either into their committees or comes onto the floor for a vote, because a lot of children's legislation has been held up or withheld by someone who's saying, well, I don't quite agree with that law, or having been told by a staffer, well, this is this and this is this aspect of the law. I think from the beginning they need to be explained. There are 13 areas of child protection laws that we are advocating that have been passed in other states. Your creation of a statewide missing children's clearinghouse, you passed a missing children's bill last year in the state of Alaska, but it could certainly be improved. Several states have put together missing children's state clearinghouses run by law enforcement, such as Florida, Kentucky, New Jersey, and the list just goes on and on, with a toll-free 800 number maintained 24 hours a day, usually with the state police, not creating a new department, but creating a new agency within an existing department, and mandating that a bulletin be produced on a monthly basis to be distributed to schools, superintendents of schools, principals, all law enforcement agencies within the state coroners, and the bulletin shows pictures of missing children, non-custodial parental abducted children, stranger abducted children, and unidentified dead children. Missing children's bills in other states also mandate and abolish any arbitrary waiting period by law enforcement and the mandatory entry of all missing children into the National Crime Information Computer. With the passage of the Missing Children's Bill in 1982, it mandated that the FBI create an unidentified dead file. We bury about 4,000 to 5,000 unidentified dead a year in this country, any given year hundreds of those children, because certain states do not use the NCIC to list their missing children. I've often said, imagine being Alaskan, spending the rest of your life looking for your child, never knowing they were buried 6 months ago or a year ago in Oregon or North Dakota or somewhere there. That's a nightmare. There are people searching this country, tens of thousands of people searching for their children, that will probably never know that some of their children have been buried in unmarked graves. When Adam was missing, we had 16 unidentified dead in the Broward County morgue in Fort Lauderdale. Four of those were adolescent girls that the coroner suspected were from other parts of the country. He held their bodies for 6 months, and then he was forced to bury them. New York City buries 500 unidentified dead in a year. So gives you an idea of that problem. Sexual abuse and exploitation. The real battle for children's rights, I think, deals with the need to take a very proactive stance. Alaska in particular is way behind in the battle of putting together exploited child units. This is a recommendation that's done in several states such as Kentucky, smaller states with smaller state budgets, where they have put together a unit that exists of a law enforcement officer, a specialist, a social worker, a specialist, a prosecutor, a specialist, a court-appointed advocate, a specialist, someone representing the court. Now what that does is allows the law enforcement agency, the social worker, the district attorney, everyone to be responsible for the child victim. It forces them to do the best they can for the child victim. The social worker who's overburdened and doesn't get to the case for 2 months, the policeman who thinks the district attorney is a jerk and won't work with him, the DA who just got out of law school and says, I can't deal with this case, I want to plea bargain it down. They all get together and give the child some justice in the courtroom. Alaska has been doing a miserable job dealing with your children. I have interviewed your law enforcement agencies and your minuscule mini-exploited unit out of Anchorage, which is comprised of state and local police. The average officer that's in that unit is dealing with 70 cases of sexual assault right now. He is backlogged at least 3 months. I know none of you could deal with 70 bills here today and do it in an appropriate manner. There are known pedophiles to be on the streets of Alaska now that are suspected to have molested upwards of 10 or 15 children, but law enforcement can't arrest them because they're 2 months behind investigating the sexual assault. Imagine if it was your child who came home and said, I was molested at the playground. Would you be furious if the law enforcement officer didn't come for 2 months? I'm sure you'd be furious, and I'm sure you'd get some action. But that is the problem. Law enforcement here has told me that they cannot even deal with the physical abuse. They're so overburdened with the sexual assault cases that they're having a tough time investigating the physical abuse. What happens in that category? The social worker or someone reports the torture or physical abuse of a child. Law enforcement or social worker doesn't get out there. Many times the child winds up dead, and that child's on their way to the morgue. Why? Because the state of Alaska let that child down and was a participant unknowingly in the murder of that child. You need sexually exploited units mandated, and you need dollars behind them. And we're not talking about a lot of dollars. It's the philosophy and concept of the unit that helps with the justice for the child. Your criminal codes are pretty good. You've done a pretty good job with penalties for repeat offenders. You need to look at them because criminal codes need to be upgraded every legislative session because we're experiencing new crimes against children, such as the man who came here from out of state with a little girl that he said was hers, etc. You know, everyone's aware of that. Child in the courtroom, we talked about videotaping of the child's testimony. Unfortunately, I won't have a chance to get at length at that, but some of the people here have heard me discuss the videotaping. I hope that you'll look at the videotaping and realize that it's a tool to give the child a little more justice. It is not meant to be used in lieu of the Sixth Amendment rights of the accused to confront the accuser. What is used in that incident is closed-circuit TV monitoring, where the child, who we expect in the courtroom to speak about every horrible detail of the sexual assault in front of a room full of strangers in our barbaric criminal justice system, can be interviewed by the defense attorney and cross-examined while the child's in another room and doesn't have to sit in front of a room full of strangers or sit across from the molester that's looking at the child and trying to intimidate the child. The competency of the witness, I feel very strongly about that. The federal rules of evidence say that in any federal courtroom, there is no such thing as qualification of witnesses, that witnesses are presumed to be competent. In Alaska and in several states, you allow judges to disqualify the child as a witness. Let the jury decide whether the child is telling the truth or not. Do not let a judge who hasn't been to a continuing education program or knows even how to interview a child witness or how to qualify a child disqualify that child. There are many children that want to testify. Children are excellent in the courtroom. They don't fantasize anal or oral intercourse at an early age. They don't have a point of reference from that standpoint. And they need to have their day in court. A pathological liar or a convicted murderer, as long as they're an adult, can testify in any courtroom in Alaska, but you need to throw out that. Privacy of the child victim. In three states, upheld with a Supreme Court decision, it is a misdemeanor for the media, any type of media, print, radio, electronic media, television, to divulge the name or picture of the sexual assault victim, whether it's a woman or a child. Our legislation allocates women and children in this incident. was held up in a 1975 Supreme Court decision that said that states had the right to bar the releasing of the names or pictures of witnesses by state law. It's tough enough to get over the sexual assault and the trauma of that and go through psychological counseling. It's tough enough for a woman to go back to work or go back into the community without everyone in the community knowing that she was sodomized 12 times by the motorcycle gang on the top of a pool table. That's not necessary in our society. And that's been upheld by the Supreme Court. Why half the states in this country don't have the privacy law or the competency law, I'll never understand. Education prevention is the most important factor, I feel. The proactive stance by states such as California and Florida mandating that psychologically approved programs be on the curriculum of every school, that every child in Alaska, whether they're native, whether they're black, white, purple, green, poor, rich, latchkey, whatever, are taught in a psychologically approved program how to resist molesters and abductors. I asked the Florida legislature, I use it as my best example, how many of you fathers, because most of the legislatures are predominantly men, how many of you, men or women, have told your children the rules of protection, that the private parts of their body are sacred to them alone, that they have the right to say no, how to resist the abductor, what to do if you're molested, who to tell? 3/4 of the Florida legislature stood up and said, we never even considered it. That was my point. It needs to be on the curriculum. And for those pompous principals and school boards who say the curriculums are too crowded, I cite many cases, and I'll cite one in particular, of the principal in South Florida who wouldn't use the program, same as a principal in Fairfax County. Fairfax County was a school bus driver that assaulted 11 girls. In Florida, it was an 8-year-old girl who was raped on the school grounds. Both school principals and school boards were sued. Fairfax County, they settled out of court for $4 million. In Florida, I believe it was $2 million settlement. The point is making is those children should have learned how to resist the molesters in school, all children. It's no guarantee that parents will do it. Not everybody's a good parent. It's harder to get a driver's license in Alaska than it is to be a parent. You only have to get drunk and 10 minutes later find a woman, you're a parent, but you can't get a driver's license when you're drunk, so it's easy to be, and I say that it's society's responsibility to care for those children of bad parents. Of the million physically abused children in this country, someone has to provide for those. And of the 1.5 million missing children in this country, the new statistics show that 30% of those are throwaway children, forced out of the home, either by a live-in boyfriend or a father, or by a mother who says, I just can't deal with it anymore, I've got 2 little children, you're 12 years old, you'll have to fend for yourself. We just did a film called Streetwise about children that were forced out on the street, tried to make it through the system, eating pizzas out of dumpsters, etc. And eventually, one of our studies, a little boy hung himself. All he ever wanted to do was have a family. And all he ever wanted to do was dysfunction in society. He was forced out of the home. He didn't want to be a male prostitute or hang out with pimps. And when he was incarcerated and the system let him down, he hung himself. Just one case in point. You have to deal with those children. Licensing and criminal history information, you have some kind of wishy-washy background check laws here. The really definitive ones and the good ones are the ones that mandate. Certain people that work with children must undergo a fingerprint and background check. You have mandated by law before in this state, I believe there's at least 30 occupations in this state, 50 in the average state, 100 in some states, that mandate you have a state and federal background check. You cannot be a doctor or a lawyer, you cannot be a hairdresser in 37 states. You cannot, in the states that have farm mutual race tracking, you cannot be a groom without a state and federal background check. You can't rub down a horse. But in Alaska, you can work in a daycare center or teach school and be a convicted child murderer, child molester. We had 300 sexual assaults of children by school teachers in the state of Florida, the first state to keep those statistics. When we background checked our teachers, 37 of them were convicted felons. One was a child murderer that served 11 years in Illinois. Since we have passed background checks mandated, there's sexual assaults by people working in daycare centers, Big Brothers. Now, you can expand it however wide you want, but you have to be definitive at some point. Yes, there can be voluntary fingerprinting in certain child-related industries. In others, it should be mandatory. The sexual assaults of children by school teachers in Florida and daycare workers went down over 500%. What did Florida do? It sent a mandate to previously convicted child molesters, don't come into the state of Florida. So where did they go? I always tease about it. Maybe they came to Alaska. But I've been here 2 days, and all I have seen in your papers and in today's paper are sexual assault in daycare centers, Boy Scout leader that was Citizen of the Year in 1970, molesting and sentenced to 31 years. And it happened here. It certainly happens here. And we talked about it, and I talked about it with the governor. How many people have the misconception that they can flee here and flee prosecution from the lower 48. You get the dregs. So does Florida. We get a lot of dregs of the population of the United States who think that they can come up here, and it's Wild West, and they can do what they want, and that law enforcement won't pursue them. So that is, and there are civil liberty guarantees in here about the background checks. The records being destroyed within a year, certain convictions that you can't deny employment for. But I personally believe that our children have civil liberties also, and that there are at least 2 million other occupations, including being a state legislature, that you don't need a background check for, rather than teaching our school children for 6 or 7 hours a day.
Yeah, but I'm sure the press will pick up on that.
It's an interesting point. I think that, you know, as I said, we had a high school teacher that testified before the Florida legislature when the teachers union opposed the background check. He says, myself and many members of the teachers unions certainly do not oppose the background checks. I'm a high school teacher. I have a 6-year-old daughter. I damn well want to know the background of the man who has my daughter 6 hours a day while I teach high school. And if he can't survive a background check, we should purge our own profession. So court-appointed special advocates, parental kidnapping, it should be a felony within the state of Alaska for someone that did not get custody of their children to flee from Anchorage and go to Prudhoe and hide out there because they know if they cross the state line they will be pursued as a felony, but they can stay within the state. I mean, that's something you need. Child pornography and child prostitution, those of you legislators that are attorneys should look at that section to upgrade your, I'm not that familiar because I haven't had the time to review your child pornography and child prostitution laws, but there's some excellent recommendations in here of upgrading the statutes, allowing experts to testify to the age of the children in child pornography photographs, and making it a crime to possess child pornography of any degree. Most states it's just commercial sale of it, but many, many pedophiles are collectors. The man that was just caught in Rhode Island with the little boy that he had for 2 years had a huge collection of Polaroids and child pornography. Certainly he was sent selling and distributing, but he had a network of about 300 other pedophiles that he mailed stuff back and forth to. They exchange information on what states were lenient and how he could go into states and steal children, molest them, what they could get away with. They're very organized. The North American Man-Boy Love Association, which operates out of New York, and the Rene Gagnon Society out of California has about 5,000 members whose slogan is sex before 8, before it's too late. Exchange information in underground newsletters. They have a toll-free 800 number to raise bail for child molesters. They had a national convention in Wales 3 years ago. They'll let each other know which are the laxest states and which are the ones that have the least laws and which is the easiest to go in and molest children. They're very organized, better organized than most law enforcement agencies. So, anyway, I wish I had more time. I have had a very enlightening and productive 2 days here because of the tremendous outpouring of the sincere legislators in this state, from the governor on down, from the people in this state saying, we know we have a lot of crimes against children in the state. We know we have done a poor job in some areas. In some areas, you've done an excellent job. I'm not here in any type of adversarial role. I'm here to say, listen, and I reiterate it, we'd like to work together. We have a legislative person full-time at the National Center that'll help you revise your bills and draft them. We've had hundreds of bills submitted to us, and we've made suggestions on them. I think you have the attention of the public. The public wants you to do something about the exploitation of Alaska's children. I think it would be a testimonial to your time, however long it's going to be in this legislature. The most meaningful thing you could do, I think, for the future of Alaska, besides oil and gas, is to pass some meaningful laws for your children. So,
I know you have a time frame.
Yeah,
I have several questions.
Oh, okay,
so,
sure.
Representative Gall and Representative Phillips, okay?
Thanks, Peter. I hope it's going to be real quick. It's been told to me, and I've seen you got some experience, that children do not lie, using that phrase. I mean, could you comment on that?
Well, children certainly do lie, and the older they get, sometimes they make up things. And
I would say under 10.
Well, it's hard to draw. It's hard to draw the line because you cannot be definitive about that because some children under 10 live in bad homes and have been exposed to adult films, and they have a point of reference. But predominantly children 6 and under or 7 under, and I don't want to be the one to draw the limit on it, do not have any point of reference to fantasize about anal or oral intercourse. They're excellent witnesses and they have no point of reference and they're good witnesses. But certainly, my contention is that certainly some children fantasize or lie, but I say give them the same chance as an adult in the courtroom. Let the jury decide whether the child's telling the truth or lying. Don't let some judge say this child has the inability to tell the difference between a fabrication and truth. Just some judges use that exact word and disqualify children, which is unacceptable. But it's a good point. But I still, the general overall answer is let them.
Well, I have a bill and I got to convince 5 attorneys on that judiciary committee with that. That's the premise I'm taking.
It's a good premise, but the premise is let them review the federal rules of evidence. The federal rules of evidence prohibit the qualifications of witnesses. They presume every witness to be competent. I mean, do we qualify adults? I mean, if you were a victim of some crime, they wouldn't say, now, do you know the difference between, did you make that up? Have you been watching any porno films? It's ridiculous.
Thank you. Mr. Walsh, I've just got a couple of quick questions. You're the vice president of this org, or vice chairman. Do you have an executive director or somebody who is your first?
Yeah, I'm just a special consultant to the National Center. Jay Howell is the executive director of the National Center for Missing and Exploited
Children.
J-A-Y-H-O-W-E-L-L. He's a former prosecutor. He did a lot of the drafting, he and I, of the Missing Children's Assistance Bill.
What is his phone number, sir?
It's area code 202-634-9821.
9821. Thank you. One other question.
There's also a lady that, in case you can't get a hold of Jay, Janet Kosid is the person who is the legislative person that will assist you in any way you want.
Thank you. Could you spell her last name?
K-O-S-I-D.
Same phone number?
Janet, yes. She's the particular specialist on legislation.
Thank you. Now, regarding runaways, I've got two quick questions. Mm-hmm. Number one, you made a reference to one young person who was incarcerated and consequently or subsequently committed suicide. We're dealing with bills at this time responding to what I believe is the number one priority, which is to get the police out there looking right away. Do you think from either a substantive or political perspective that, I guess I'm going to go
ahead. I know what your question
is. My position is very clear. I don't think the kids should be treated like delinquents. We don't have facilities to lock them up in a nice home. If we're going to restrain them or incarcerate them, it's going to be in jail. If we have to make a choice between ways of approaching this as a first cut, where should our priority be?
Excellent question. First of all, I personally feel that many children have the right to run away. They're running away from physical or sexual assault, a nightmare, but they're running from the frying pan into the fire in many cases. Now, I lump into these the throwaways. You've got to consider lots of children don't choose to be voluntarily missing. Police have assumed it, legislators have assumed it, that these children chose to run. Many of them were pushed out of the car physically onto the street. Now, I don't believe in incarceration. I don't believe in putting children in jails with adults, etc. And I don't believe that in certain cases the police have the right to get a little girl who's been molested continually by stepdaddy, because stepdaddy wants her back, to go out on the street and hunt her down. It's a tough problem. I think there's no pat solution. There's no answer. First of all, they should take the report immediately and put it in the NCIC and then determine the circumstances. Police have limited resources, so I don't think there's any legislation in this country that can mandate they look for every child and bring every child back. You'll never be able to do that. That would be fine if you could do that. But secondly, I say this, I pose this question back to you. If we don't start providing safe homes for the children, if we don't start putting money for them...
Excuse me, you're running out of time. Let me just back up and get it real clear. What we have in the law right now is the requirement upon the state that if the child asks for shelter or service from the Department of Health and Social Services, we are already obligated to provide that service under law. Mm-hmm. The problem is whether or not to take the child into custody. The other problem is what the time frame is on looking for the child. It's 5 o'clock now, so okay. I'd be grateful.
There should be no time frame on looking for the child. And other states have passed laws that allow the police to look for the child, to get the child, but to turn the child over to social services immediately and let social services determine whether that child's been abused and go home. In many cases, it saves the child from being murdered on the streets. That's a good law. That's the way to do it.
Thank you, sir.
Okay.
Any other quick things?
Yeah. I'm by profession a family lawyer, and I see these kids before they get into this situation. Well, a family's in difficulty. I note that I've looked through your publication here. I note that there's nothing in there about the importance of a family court or mandatory mediation. What is your position on that?
Well, we had such pressure to put this packet out that the one area that I really want to delve in this that is all related is the foster care system and the family court. We are making strong recommendations in an upcoming packet. It's such a complicated issue. The foster care system in this country is in such disarray that some kids go into 4 and 5 foster homes before they're even eligible for adoption. It's a nightmare. They're molested in many foster homes because there's no background checks of foster care parents. An AMBLA member was just arrested as a proof foster parent in New Jersey who was using abused little boys and child pornography. That's a nightmare of the situation. We couldn't cover everything in here, but if you give me your card, we have some specialists in the National Center that are experts on writing foster care family court legislation, which is a big problem and a big letdown in the system. And in the interest of time, I'd love to work with you on it because that's a real area of concern and it's a real nightmare. Great, because we've let kids down. We've taken them out of the home. You know, I'll get it. We've let so many of our children down. We've kept them from being murdered at home. That old adage, put to keep the family together. I mean, we have seen Los Angeles returned 17 children last year that were murdered in the home. A family court judge and a social worker. Two of the kids were boiled alive on the stove. It'd be better if they were in five foster homes and alive than go back to the abusing situation. But we treat our children terribly in the foster care system. We turn them into nuts. We turn them into juvenile delinquents and runners and everything like that, because they, by the time the courts have decided they're eligible for adoption, they're 12. We know all that. We can talk about this.
Thank you very much. Yes, we really appreciate it. And any additional booklets like this that you could send to Marge, some of the...
I'm going to make sure Marge gets one to everyone, and I know there's a lot of terrific concerned legislators here. It was a very positive 2 days for me. I appreciate your time and the opportunity to talk.
Are you available?
Sure. Nice to meet you. Pleasure. Thank you. Okay. I'm sorry I got to run.